This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Let's talk about deep state stuff. Let's celebrate the whistleblowers being brought back. Josh Hammer is here. Tommy Robinson's here. Dave Brad is here. We have a huge show coming up on I'm Right. Okay, before we get to deep state things, I just want to remember that we need to pray. I know about that mass shooting today. We don't do mass shooting television here. It's awful. God help. God be with those families. This is a time to come together. It's a time to pray. Time to ignore the gun-grabbing communists on the left. Pray. Come together. And just know there is evil out there. And as I warned you before, they're going to keep coming after soft targets of any kind. So we need to harden them. Schools, churches, that this is where the animals, this is where the demons are going to come and look for prey. So pray and don't become prey. All right? All right. Now let's talk about what's going on in the government. The Trump administration deserves all the credit in the world for their attempts so far to clean out the deep state filth. But don't think for a moment that it has been cleaned out. Communists have spent decades burrowing themselves inside of every single branch of the government, and they're not simply going to walk away now that Donald Trump is president of the United States. These are anti-American subversives who hold on to power in this country, and they must be dug out, root and branch. You see FEMA? Trump's going to overhaul FEMA. Of course, FEMA's freaking out about it. Super upset. Well, why? Why are Democrats super upset? Because they conquered FEMA too. Do I need to remind you after that hurricane, FEMA, they were skipping houses. They were going around finding houses who needed aid, and if you had a Trump flag, they skipped your house. Deeply evil. This is the system they've worked very hard to put into place, and this is why it's going to take a long time. I don't even know if it could be done in 4 years. Let's hope we get another four of somebody afterwards, and then another four after that. It's going to take that kind of time to root these people out. And, if I may point out, we wouldn't know a lot of these things if it wasn't for the whistleblowers.
It appears that I was retaliated against because I forwarded information to my superiors and others that questioned the official narrative of the events of January 6th. As a result, I was accused of promoting conspiratorial views and unreliable information. Because I did this, the FBI questioned my allegiance to the United States.
Mr. Friend, you ever been to a school board meeting?
Yes, I have.
FBI ever sent you to the parking lot of a school board meeting?
Yes, they have.
And in the parking lot of a school board meeting where the FBI sent you, you were taking down information regarding people's license plates.
That's correct.
But the FBI will crush you. This government will crush you and your family if you try to expose the truth about things that they are doing that are wrong. And we are all examples of that.
That's the reason we found out just how evil all the tyranny was inside of our government. And by the way, I should note, credit to Cash Patel, Dan Bongino, those whistleblowers, those brave whistleblowers have finally been made whole. That was an announcement that was put out there. I'm a very happy man. I hope you are happy as well. But back to what they're doing inside of the government. Remember, without those brave whistleblowers, without people coming forward, we'd have to rely on people like Abby Phillips.
This idea that this was a weaponized, these were all these different prosecutions and all these different jurisdictions were not all directed from one place. There's absolutely no evidence of that. You guys can tell me what evidence you have of that, but I've never seen it and I've never heard anybody
voice it. The Obama and Biden administrations didn't politicize the DOJ. And
okay, who?
Oh, I mean, come on. You could, I mean, they were better at hiding it who it was or not transparent.
I'm just saying,
how do we know who
if
exactly?
You are making the
so
claim that this was directed by some kind of puppeteer
There's
at the top of the pyramid, who is that person?
So how did the IRS only go after conservative groups?
They did it, though.
And
why?
You're not answering my question. Who is the person?
I know, right?
Who are they?
I'm talking about the conservatives that Obama and Biden went after.
There's no proof. I'm sorry.
This is a tactic. Who was it? Name the person. There's no evidence. Of course, there's tons and tons and tons of evidence. Nathan Wade, when they were trying to throw Donald Trump in prison, Nathan Wade kept visiting the freaking White House. It's all kinds of evidence. Matthew Graves, his witch wife, was checked in and out of the White House over and over and over again when he was chucking as many Trump supporters in prison as humanly possible. Of course, all the evidence is out there, and they're all still there. Tulsi Gabbard talked about what she found.
And you've also found many bags of information. I think they call them burn bags. They're supposed to be burned, and they didn't get burned, having to do with how corrupt the 2020 election was. And when will that all come out?
Mr. President, I will be the first to brief you once we have that information collected. But you're right, it's we are finding documents literally tucked away in the back of safes in random offices in these bags and in other areas, which again speaks to the intent of those who are trying to hide the truth from the American people and trying to cover up the politicization that was led by people like John Brennan and James Clapper and others that have caused really immeasurable harm to the American people and to our country.
Great job.
They're still there. Lots and lots of them. We have a lot of work to do to cut the tumor out of our government. Again, credit to the Trump administration for making it happen. Now, let's talk about flag burning since that's been in the news. Josh Hammer is going to join us. Let's find out what the actual law is. Before we get to that, let's get to how you feel. How's your mood? See, as we get older, we don't get all the things we need in our body, and we get too much estrogen. It's in our waters. Synthetic estrogens everywhere right now. That's why our testosterone levels are dropping. That's why we're sad a lot. And we don't have to live like this. You don't have to feel like you feel all the time. Let Chalk help you. Whatever you're looking for in your life, young, old, man, woman, Chalk has natural herbal supplements that will make your life better. They have made my life better. A male vitality stack from Chalk is the best health decision I have ever made in my life. I will never stop taking one every single day. Again this morning, every day, I take my male vitality stack. I want you to feel like I feel. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Okay, so we have to talk redistricting, Supreme Court, flag burning, and obviously to get into the legal stuff, you know who we always go to, my friend Josh Hammer of The Josh Hammer Show. All right, Josh, Donald Trump famously put out this executive order about flag burning, and he says on camera, if you burn a flag, you get a year in jail. I don't think the president can just make laws like that or anything, but I don't know. You know what's happening?
So it's a very interesting legal question, actually. So there actually is a law. There's actually multiple laws, Jesse, that Congress has passed. There's one going back to the 1960s, 1968, back during the Vietnam War protests, Kent State, all the flag burnings back then. And then Congress passed another anti-flag burning statute based in 1989. And that latter statute, which is 18 U.S. Code Section 700, does have a statutorily required one-year prison sentence term. So that is where the 1 year is coming from. It's not like he's kind of just concocting this out of thin air. He's basically issuing an executive order and saying that as it pertains to certain types of flag burning, we are going to actually enforce this 1989 statute. Now, the devil's always in the details here. So in the executive order, he says, Jesse, we know the Supreme Court has said that there's a First Amendment right to engage in flag burning, but they didn't actually talk about when it is used as a means of inciting violence, you know, various exceptions in well-established First Amendment doctrine. So that is the executive order taken at face value, is to saying we're going to enforce this statute as pertains to certain types of exceptions that the actual underlying Supreme Court cases from 35 years ago did not necessarily touch. Now, I actually personally, Jesse, would go actually quite a bit further than this, actually. I think that the two Supreme Court cases in question Texas versus Johnson from 1989. Then there was a companion case from the next year, U.S. versus Eichmann. I think those cases are wrongly decided. They are both 5-4 cases there. A lot of folks note that Antonin Scalia joined the majority opinion in both cases. What they don't often note is that Chief Justice William Rehnquist, who is just as well-known a conservative as Scalia, dissented both times there. I don't think that you have a First Amendment right to burn the American flag. I don't think you have a First Amendment right actually to burn anything, because literally burning anything, to pour some gasoline and set something aflame, is not speech. It's literally not speech. It is conduct. And frankly, it's actually dangerous conduct, because something like fire is involved. And as conduct, as an action, the government has the ability to regulate it, and if it so chooses, to actually criminalize it as well. So that's my actual stance as it pertains to the overarching First Amendment question there. But it's important to note that the executive order on its own terms actually accepts these two Supreme Court cases. They say we're not challenging that there, but we're operating within the confines there. We're just carving out kind of a First Amendment exception there. That's what it's trying to do.
Okay, so as you said, the devil's in the details. So not that I would ever in a million years harm an American flag. In fact, we go around the neighborhood and make sure they're not touching the ground. But if I so desire and I light an American flag on fire in my backyard, am I in trouble? What does it mean to incite violence? How do you decide that I'm trying to incite violence?
Right. So it would be up to the local laws. What the executive order is essentially saying is that we are going to allow local governments, state governments, to try to enforce this as they see fit. They're ultimately trying to get this thing to a jury. That would be ultimately kind of in the eye of the beholder. Does this actually raise to the threshold of incitement violence? Now, look, in the abstract, you know, you're hypothetical, just doing it in your own backyard. I mean, the answer is obviously not. Now, again, in my personal opinion, Jesse, I'm of the opinion there that this actually should be criminal behavior, whether or not it actually incites violence there. But given the executive order there, no, that sort of conduct almost assuredly would not be covered. Again, the idea is that it would get to a jury, but very hard to see how any kind of personal conduct in one's backyard would actually incite violence. The final thing, though, that I think is very important to note, though, on this executive order, Jesse, it's really not just about the law. The law is sound. I think that Donald Trump has made a legally sound decision. But I think what Donald Trump is actually doing here when it comes to this executive order is he is yet again putting Democrats in the unenviable position of defending, in this case, literal flag burning. He's yet again taken kind of one of these wedge cultural issues, whether it's biological males in women's sports, whether it's trying to oppose the deportation of a Hamasnik like Mahmoud Khalil or the MS-13 guy, Kilmar Abrego-Garcia. He's putting them on the defensive when it comes to these 80-20 issues. I mean, he's literally making them defend flag burning. He's making Adam Schiff, all the usual suspects, you know, defend your quote-unquote right to burn the American flag. So it's politically genius. It does legally work there, Jesse, in my opinion, but I think that the law is frankly only half the point of this executive order.
All right, let's shift gears to California redistricting. I understand Republicans have filed a petition with the state Supreme Court. What's happening out there?
Yeah, so they're basically challenging all the way to the California Supreme Court. This is not necessarily an issue of federal law. It is pretty well established that states have plenary power to redistrict as they so choose, subject to some Voting Rights Act exceptions when it comes to racial gerrymandering. By the way, very interesting court case coming up this coming term, where it seems like the Supreme Court could finally once and for all put an end to a lot of Voting Rights Act of 1965 shenanigans when it comes to this notion that you have a statutory constitutional requirements to create these majority-minority districts, these majority black districts in Alabama, South Carolina. Very interesting stuff. That's going to be at the Supreme Court this coming term. But as it pertains out in California, what Gavin Newsom and California Democrats are trying to do is they're essentially trying to find a too clever by half workaround around their own state of California independent commission that has been established when it comes to redistricting there. And it's a clever lawsuit. I'm not necessarily sure it's going to be successful, to be totally honest with you, just given the ideological complexion of the California Supreme Court. They will probably bend over backwards to find some way of siding with Gavin Newsom and California Democrats, especially when cherished, precious U.S. House seats are at stake there. So I'm not particularly optimistic here, but they're basically challenging it on state law grounds and saying that at least as a procedural matter that Gavin Newsom is doing this too quickly and is not actually abiding by the relevant law which created this independent commission when it comes to redistricting.
All right. The New York Times, which I try to not read, continues to put out piece after piece after piece talking about Democrats and what a disastrous electoral college position they're in. What's happening?
Yeah, so this, you know, this relates directly to the redistricting, right? So, I mean, you know, every 10 years we have a U.S. Census. Every 10 years we get new apportionment in the U.S. Congress. I mean, you know, just Jesse, just look at the 2020 census. You know, the 2020 census basically says all you need to know. For the very first time in the history of California as a state, California actually lost seats in the Electoral College in the U.S. House. So literally, it's an incredible stat. Literally, Gavin Newsom has presided over the California that for the first time since California became a state in the 1850s has actually lost seats in the Congress and votes in the Electoral College. But it's not just California. California, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, all the usual blue state suspects, they're all losing seats. What states are gaining seats? Well, the exact opposite. I mean, my state of Florida, your state of Texas, the Carolinas, Georgia, Arizona, Tennessee, all the usual suspects are gaining seats. And the point of this New York Times article, which I guess they're trying to light a fire under their ideological buddies over at DNC headquarters. The purpose of this article is basically to say that, you know what, based on the trends that we see thus far, it's going to continue. The 2030 census is going to look really, really good, I think, for red states and for Republicans in general. By the way, it'll look even better, I think, if Donald Trump is able to follow through on his long sought after promise to try to make sure that illegal aliens are not counted in the census, which they definitely should not be. There is absolutely no requirement that they be. It is frankly appalling and abhorrent that they are. That'll actually probably make it even better for red states, actually.
What's going on with Lisa Cook?
So Lisa Cook is one of the seven Federal Reserve governors on the Board of Governors. Donald Trump is, you know, as only Trump can do, he's trying to become the first president to successfully fire one of the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors. And he's firing her because we have pretty, she's not been indicted or convicted, but we are able to suss out the publicly available data when it comes to her interactions with financial institutions there. And there are deeply credible allegations, highly credible, that she has engaged in mortgage fraud because she actually listed multiple residences in Michigan and Georgia, as the case may be, as her principal place of residence in order to secure a more favorable bank loan. Now, the problem, among others, is that the Federal Reserve is literally the regulator of the financial system. They are the lender of last resort. That is kind of the definition of what a central bank is in a modern economy. So it's a massive crisis of public legitimacy to have one of these seven governors on the Board of Governors who sits there on this body overseeing the financial institutions if she herself is defrauding financial institutions. Now, the relevant statute, the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, says that a governor can only be removed for cause. So there's this whole debate as to whether or not this constitutes legitimate cause. You know, what's her name? Lisa Cook's attorney, Abby Lowell, is now saying that, oh, cause only means indicted or convicted by a jury. But does it? I mean, Congress could have said that. Congress literally could have written that if they want that. Their cause seems to me to be subjective in the eyes of the beholder there. And this seems to me to be a pretty good cause. Someone who was credibly alleged to defraud financial institutions while sitting on the Fed Board of Governors. But, you know, this whole statutory question, Jesse, about cause is actually something of a sideshow from the overarching constitutional point, which is that Donald Trump as the executive has the executive power to fire who sits in his executive branch. Now, Cook's defenders will say that the Federal Reserve is independent, is unique, it's not really within the executive branch, to which I say, well, literally, where is it? I mean, it's either in Article 1 of the Congress, Article 2 of the executive branch, or Article 3 of the judiciary. I'm pretty sure it's not the Congress or the judiciary. So process of elimination right there. So, you know, one way or the other, Jesse, Donald Trump is going to win on this.
Apparently every Democrat in the country committed mortgage fraud. It's wild. Josh, thank you, brother. I appreciate it. I don't understand why you would do that. I mean, I guess they all get away with it or have gotten away with it. Maybe that's why they all do it. It's such an obvious crime. Anyway, how'd you sleep last night? Do you get a good night's sleep every night? Beam is here for you. Beam is here to make your life better by making your sleep better. You can wake up every single morning having knocked out 8-9 hours of good sleep. Not getting up to pee 10 times, rolling over, good sleep, natural sleep, because Beam is drug-free. It's simply a cup of hot chocolate with all kinds of natural things in it that'll just put you relaxed and drifting off to sleep. Go get a bag of Dream Powder. You'll have one in your home forever. Shopbeam.com/JesseKelly. We'll be back.
There are 11 very strong candidates. President Trump knows some of them he doesn't. I'm going to begin talking to them after Labor Day, and there'll be some other folks around the White House who will also interview them. And we will present three or four candidates to the president. The new chair will be someone who is expert on monetary policy, regulatory policy,
yep,
and knows how to run a sprawling institution, which the Fed is.
Okay. Scott Bessent's a very sharp guy. As soon as I hear the word expert, I tend to cringe a little bit because of how dumb most of those people are. But I assume Scott Bessent has someone good in mind. Joining me now, Dave Bratz, Senior Vice President of Business Relations at the Great Liberty University. Okay, Dave, why do we need a new Fed chair? What's it take to be Fed chair? Where are we going to find one of these experts?
Yeah, the folks, if you want an answer, go read the monster at Jekyll Island or whatever, referring to the beginning of the Federal Reserve and how that institution was set up in 1913. And then The Secrets of the Temple is a more modern book. But your intuition was right there. Bessent is good, but he's got to operate within a fixed political swamp environment up there. And so they're going to get these experts, right? And the economic experts will not allow you to bring up, you know, the Fed has no problem with leftist policies, right? Exploring, you know, the dimensions of multicolored flags on their buildings and all this. It's serious time and energy spent on this. But they will not diagnose, right? And just so if people don't know, the Fed has two mandates. One is price stability and the other is unemployment. They probably should not have unemployment because they don't have all the levers for that. They should just be in charge of price. So when they're given the second charge of unemployment, they say, well, we can do DEI and everything else related under the sun. But they will never look at major problems we have with the allocation of capital in our country, like a 20 million person border invasion. I wish the next Fed governor would have to tackle that. What about the 1.5 million dead and injured now in just Ukraine, plus a million in Russia, and the impact of all of our defense spending? Where's the economic analysis, right? They have 1,000 economists in that building, all getting paid big bucks. So your intuition is spot on. They're going to hire experts that are just, you know, oh, I'm going to run a bunch of regressions and, you know, do all these statistics and whatever. And they're not going to hit the right target because they're not aiming at the right target, which is the welfare of the economy and the American people. And the elites don't care about that.
Dave, how does the Federal Reserve deal with prices when prices are supposedly set by a market that is free?
Yeah, no, that would be nice as well, right? So we have, in addition to the Federal Reserve problem, we got, you know, $7 trillion government budgets per year, and we don't use the price system, and we have monopolies all over the place, like the Magnificent Seven, right? The big seven firms that make up about 40% of the S&P 500, seven firms, you know, Google, Microsoft, all them. So they're all monopolies. So our price system is broken. We're not using markets. If you use markets, that favors the small guy. If you got to have cronies up in D.C. adding lines into the budget of the government, that favors the lawyers and the bureaucrats. And so how does the Fed can shape interest rates, right? And they can do this, right? We saw under Biden, they printed way too much money, right? Easy money. And we had 22% inflation over those 4 years, right? If you add it all up together, you lost 1/5 of your purchasing power. And people aren't mad. They don't know what that sentence means yet. You didn't only lose 1/5 of your wallet or your income. You lost in just those 4 years 1/5 of your retirement plan, right? Because when you take those dollars out, they're all worth 1/5 less. And that's just from those 4 years. And so the Fed has, as a stated purpose, our target, 2% inflation per year. Well, just do the math on that. What's 50 years at 2%? You've lost 100% of your purchasing power over a 50-year period. That's their goal. The American people don't know any of this. because we won't teach them that in the schools. Otherwise, there'd be a mini revolution.
Well, that's all pretty terrible.
Yeah.
All right. What's going on with India? Trump made good on his promise, slapped a 50% tariff on India. He's mad at them for a variety of things, including buying up all that Russian cheap oil. But what does that mean for me? I don't even like Indian food. What do I care?
Well, Trump's doing the right thing on all this. I was on the big India Times, right? It's the biggest media over there in India, with about six Indian panelists and a Chinese panelist. And we want to be friends with India, right? They're pro-democracy, they're Western, but we got some problems, right? They have tariff and non-tariff barriers on us. They got trade deficits with us. They're subsidizing oil to Russia. They're being too friendly with China. And I said, you know, you need to assume your rightful place on the world stage. They're a superpower. They got 1.4 billion people. They're getting rich. They're powerful, but they have not made it clear what principles they believe in as a country, right? We have a constitution. We protect minority rights, you know, in the James Madison, the factions in law. We have provided free sea lanes for the past 70 years. I said we helped win World War II with our allies and a bunch of jaws dropped. And we've been paying the price. And so we need them to step up and pay part of the price for maintaining a stable world order. So that's why they matter. And then, you know, hopefully Trump, if he can end this Ukraine war, he does a rapprochement, which means, you know, we're not going to be buddies with Russia and Putin. But it'd be better to have China with a two-front problem, right? Russia to the north of them and us over the Pacific, and then having India with us too. So Trump's knocking some heads in order to get these hard moves accomplished. And they're all necessary. And he's doing the right things, and people get upset in the short run. But hey, if you want to be a friend, you got to be a real friend, not a fake friend.
What risk do we run of India running to the arms of China? Because that would certainly not be a good that would not be a good alliance to have.
Yeah, well, they're not running there, but they're tiptoeing right now. They've been meeting and talking, and they got meetings over in China next week. And Putin was over in China with Xi, I think it was this week, and Modi was not, which is, you know, a little bit promising. But India, like I was saying, they need to share our long-run strategic principles. They're being a little too cute, right? They're just cozying up for short-run benefit with anyone who gives them benefit. While we have to pay the price, right? And Europe wants to go to war, and they want us to pay the price. The Middle East, we have wars. Now we're down in, where are we? We're down in Venezuela, I think, right? We got the Mexican cartels. We're getting serious on that. It's like, hey, guys, you know, we're running out of bullets and running out of dollars. And someone else needs to be an adult in the room. Everybody has been free riding, and the American people know it, and they're sick of it.
Dave, Trump came out and said something about Chinese students and letting them... Well, here he was.
Look, we're getting along very well with China, and I'm getting along very well with President Xi. I think it's very insulting to say your students can't come here. Because they'll go out and they'll start building schools and they'll be able to survive it. But I like that their students come here. I like that other countries' students come here. And you know what would happen if they didn't? Our college system would go to hell very quickly. You'd have, and it wouldn't be the top colleges. It would be colleges that struggle on the bottom. And you take out 300,000 or 600,000 students out of the system. I like having, and I told this to President Xi, that we're honored to have their students here. Now, with that, we check and we're careful and we see who's there, and Marco wants that. We spoke, we're in the same position. But we have a tremendous college system, the best in the world, nobody even close. That's why China sends them here.
Yeah, you can count me out on pretty much all that, Dave. We 15% of our college students are apparently Chi-Coms, and they only come here to spy and steal things. In what universe is this okay?
No, I agree with you. I think he's probably doing some strategery. He knows the base is going to go hyperplex on him, and he'll have to pivot. He's got to deal with China right now in the short run of these trade agreements, so he's trying to probably be friendly in the short run. That's not going to work for the reasons you just stated. And I usually don't brag on my own school, but Liberty University is ranked number one most conservative school in the country, training Champions for Christ in the Hill today. The Hill, the big D.C. swamp rag up there that's popular with all the Congress. So just wanted to put in a good word for Liberty University.
You brag on yourself all day long. That's always welcome on this show, Dave. Dave, appreciate you very much. Come back soon. A good man. Maybe I should be the head of the Federal Reserve. I don't have any idea what I would do. I mean, I don't know anything about it, but how hard can it be? Anyway, you know what's easy? Switching your cell phone service to Pure Talk. That's really easy. Do you understand that you just go to puretalk.com/JesseTV? Means to handle it all. We're talking about the patriotic mobile company, the one whose CEO fought for this country, the company that'll save you a fortune. What if your cell phone bill could get cut in half? Would that help? A little extra scratch laying around? When I switched from T-Mobile to Pure Talk, clean in two, my bill got cut in half. Switch. puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, by now, unless you've been living under a rock, you've probably seen a picture or the video of a 14-year-old girl in Scotland with a hatchet and a knife fighting off, or at least attempting to scare off somebody who was after her. Joining me now to talk about what exactly happened out there, what is going on, are these people about to have a revolution? The great Tommy Robinson, British journalist. Okay, Tommy, would you do me a favor for those who are unaware of it? Unpack this story. What happened? Why is she running around with a hatchet?
So there's a viral video. It shows a young Scottish child who clearly says, "You've attacked children." So she's been attacked, or her sister's been attacked, violently attacked. The allegation is by these migrant. It's a migrant man. Now, just so people understand, from one end of Europe, from one end of Britain to the other, young girls like this have been kidnapped, tortured, and raped. And whenever this happens, they've been made they've been made the scapegoat. So even now, the media are probably about to try and spin this, totally spin it. Even though you can hear the little girl saying, "You attacked us, leave us alone, stay away from us," you can hear her clearly talking about a previous physical attack, which allegedly is to do with the man videoing the young girls. But across Britain, children are being targeted. The police stand by, allow it to happen, facilitate it, and that little girl now has faced prosecution for having a weapon. Well, this is going on across our country, and the media now are trying to spin it to say there's no proof that she was attacked. You can clearly hear what she's saying in the video. And it's a sad state of affairs now that young girls are having to arm themselves with weapons to defend themselves against migrants who have been imported into this country.
Gosh, what a friggin' world. Did you say she's being prosecuted? What's happening to him?
Nothing's happening to him. She's being prosecuted. Now, just so you know, just last week at a migrant hotel in Epping, a migrant let himself into an old lady's house, walked into her house. Her daughter then chased him. And when her daughter chased him, her daughter now faces prosecution. The migrant has not been arrested, not been prosecuted. The daughter who chased him out of the house has faced prosecution for what happened at the migrant hotel. This little girl is facing criminal prosecution. The migrant, nothing at all.
Tommy, I see these videos in Scotland, in Ireland. I see these videos, and I see the anger rising. Obviously, you've been a part of this, of raising a big part of this, raising awareness of all this. Are the people, are they fed up? And I don't know what that means, right? I certainly don't want to see anyone get hurt, but are people fed up? Where's this going?
This country is bubbling like never before. I'm not just exaggerating here. It's brewing on revolution. The public are awake. The public are furious. The public understand their safety has been taken. They realize we've been betrayed. We're looking at our culture disappear. Our towns and cities are changing. The demographics are changing that quick, that fast. We feel like foreigners in our own towns and cities. That's what's happened that quick, that fast. Whilst British people are struggling to get dentist appointments, to get doctors, migrants are being brought in, put in four-star hotels. British pensioners cannot afford their heating, can't pay their bills, whilst migrants are put up in hotels with free luxury meals every single day. Many of the migrants that have come in, there have been 25 sexual assaults on children by migrants in hotels. Put up in hotels. 9 British women have been raped by migrants just in those hotels. Just so you know, 90% of rape cases don't go to court. So if we've got 9 court cases of migrants who have raped women, how many British women are being raped? And there's not a day that goes by now where we don't see a story of a migrant sexually assaulting, attacking, torturing young girls and British women in this country. And the whole time that's happening, our government want to call anyone who opposes it far right, racist, extremist. It doesn't wash anymore. Those words and those smears and those labels worked for 20 years. They paralyzed this entire nation of men and women who are too scared to speak out. I can confidently say now that fear, that bubble, it's burst. The British public are awake. You're going to see, I told you, Jesse, before, on the 13th of September, we're expecting 1 million people to descend from every corner of Britain onto our capital city, where the British public will send a message to the world that we are remaining silent no longer. We're watching the destruction of this country no more. We will not be silent any longer. That's what's happening, and I'm telling you, the country is bubbling. It's brewing for revolution. It's happening. Cat's out of the bag. They can't put it back in. People are awake. The more you see videos like this, what the media will now try and do, and politicians, is spin this, but it doesn't matter. They used to have the power. They used to have the monopoly. They don't have any power anymore. I pick this up, send one tweet, we reach more than the whole BBC. It doesn't matter anymore. Their power is gone. We're grateful to Elon Musk for giving the public back a space where we can see what's happening, we can discuss these topics and conversations. X is the only platform we have left in this country. If it wasn't for Elon Musk buying X, we'd be in the dark. None of us would have got this video. They'd have censored it, they'd have deplatformed it, and then they'd have spun the whole country with their media narrative. It doesn't wash anymore. Britain's awake.
Tommy, can you help me understand location when it comes to where they're putting these people, where these assaults are happening? And I say this because I'm not physically there. Is this isolated to the cities? Are they putting them in the countryside? Is it where is this taking place?
Well, what used to happen, because I'm from a town called Luton Town, which is a very rough town, 30 miles north of London. It has a 50% Muslim population. It's a very poor town, working class. These are the sorts of towns all these migrants used to be thrown into. They used to rape their way through them, and it would be our problem. But not anymore. Now, hotels in every single corner of Britain are full up with migrants. So in leafy suburban areas, places that weren't touched or affected by Islamic immigration, now in those small little areas, they can't let their children walk to school. They're getting sexually assaulted. So the problem that I used to talk about, which used to be confined to big cities like where I'm from, has now spread to every corner of Britain. There's not a single area that's not being affected anymore. So now the public have had a mass awakening, because it was all right when it wasn't in their backyard. Well, now it's in their backyard. It's not confined to one area. It's every corner of Britain, every town, every city. Hotels are full. Migrant attacks are happening in the places that you wouldn't expect them to happen, where there were no migrants. You might have a totally English suburban area like Epping, which has now been flooded with hotels housing 200 migrants, where young children are being sexually assaulted on their way to school. This is happening from one corner of Britain to the other. There's no hiding it anymore. The public see it. They feel it. I can sense, Jesse, that there is a massive shift in this country in public opinion. Something I've only watched and dreamed about for 15 years. I've been banging my head against the wall trying to wake this country up. And now the country's awake. It's awake. It's ready. People are listening. As I said, we're going to send a message to the establishment, British patriots, young, old, women, grandmas, children, are going to travel from all over Britain to send a message to our treacherous, tyrannical, traitorous government on September 13th.
Tommy, you mentioned earlier that the cops are complicit, that the cops shield them. That is beyond belief for a lot of us who have a lot of respect for law enforcement. Can you help me understand that dynamic?
Yeah. So police officers, I'll give you a couple of examples from government studies now, not my opinion. Two fathers, their 13-year-old daughters were in a house being raped by a group of Muslim men. The dads got together. They went to the house to get their daughters back. The police turned up and arrested the dads. They left the children in the house with Pakistani Muslim men being raped. Another incident, a young 12-year-old girl was in a derelict house, an abandoned home, five Muslim men sexually assaulting and raping her. The police turned up. They arrested the 12-year-old girl for drunk and disorderly. They arrested the 12-year-old child for drunk and disorderly. They did not arrest or prosecute the men. Quite literally, the invading men have been given free rein from one end of this country to the other to kidnap, torture, and rape. Now, I know to your viewers that sounds unbelievable, but if you want to put a scale on the power of political correctness, it paralyzed an entire country like Britain. It paralyzed their police force and government from one end of the country to the other. They stood by, and in all the government reports, in Rotherham, in Telford, in Rochdale, in Rotherham, 1,400 children were raped. Rotherham only has a 3.7% Muslim population. In Telford, 1,000 children were raped, five are dead. There's only a 1.7% Muslim population in that town. In Telford, they identified 200 Muslim rapists in that town alone. There's only 1,000 Muslim men in that town. 20% of the men were raping our children and murdering them, and only 11 of those men have faced prosecution. So when you see the cases in the UK and the pictures of the Muslims being charged in each town, it's a handful. When there's the reality is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds in every town and city. The rape gang inquiry just been published now by Rupert Lowe and Sammy Woodhouse. Sammy Woodhouse is a survivor of these rape gangs in Rotherham. They've identified 85 Islamic communities in towns and cities across the country which were raping their way through them. 85. Basically, every single town that has an Islamic community in Britain has these gangs targeting young English children. And whilst they were targeting, the police stood by, and they didn't just stood by, they prosecuted the families, they prosecuted the English men who stood up, they demonised us, they imprisoned us, they lied to the public about us, because they all had dirty hands. So there is for your audience to understand the scale of this problem, and in America, wake up, because if you've got Islamic communities, I guarantee you it's happening there. And the Democrats, just like our Labour Party, will be covering it up, and they'll cover it up because their next vote bank for their politics is coming from that Islamic community. And what means more to them, just like in England, what meant more to the Labour Party, the Islamic vote meant more than protecting young English girls. And your Democrat Party will be no different.
God have mercy. Tommy, final question. Are there any military leaders in Britain who have spoken out against this, current or former?
Ant Middleton is a former SAS military hero. He is speaking at our next event on the 13th of September. He is speaking strong. He's going to run for mayor of London. He'll face the same accusations and attacks, but the difference is where we are now to 24 months ago, even 12 months ago. Yes, people are now speaking. People are now starting to find the courage. And as more people speak up, it becomes more palatable, more acceptable, and more people are finding courage to speak up. So keep your eyes on the UK. Big things are brewing. There's a shift in public opinion. It's not going away.
Praise God. Tommy, blessings to you, brother. Stay after him. It's friggin' horrific. Evil. And he's right. Democrats are the same. Tried as hard as they could to do the same thing here, and they've been successful in a lot of ways. Evil, deeply evil, and it's all about power. Anyway, lighten the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And here's a different lighten the mood for you. Your voice works. It works now. No longer is corporate America able to just constantly trash you, trash your culture, trash the country without hearing from you. Because of the power of social media, your voice now works, and we are speaking up. We're getting loud. So when they trash things we love, we speak up. Cracker Barrel got a lot of crap because they changed their stupid logo, spent something like $700 million to figure out a new logo that sucked, and everybody got mad at them for it. They just put out a statement. We thank our guests for sharing your voices and love for Cracker Barrel. We said we would listen, and we have. Our new logo is going away, and our old timer will remain. The days of laissez-faire, oh, I'll just let it go, have to be over. You have to treat these people with aggression. And we did. Little wins. Celebrate them. See you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.